First of all, thank you for the opportunity that you guys have given me to speak. It was interesting how it came about. Jimmy Haynes, who's a minister at the congregation down at the Lakeshore Church of Christ there in Jacksonville, had mentioned to me, he said, "Hey, can I talk with you for a second?" "Sure, okay." He was like, "I have some family down in Tallahassee. They heard you speak, and they were wanting to know if you wanted to speak." Okay, that wasn't what I was expecting, but okay. It was kind of random how that happened, but I'm very appreciative of that, and I'm definitely appreciative of them down there in Jacksonville giving me the opportunity to speak. So I guess I'll share a little bit about myself. My name's Ernest Peoples. I'm here in Florida because I'm in the military, like a lot of people. I could probably give you one guess. You probably figure it out. How I ended up in Florida, really good question. Not even going to question that anymore. But I started to realize that you end up in certain places in life for a reason, whether you ever find out what that is. And if you do, one of two ways you can take it. Or you may never realize why you're somewhere. But what's the most important thing about being somewhere and you have no idea why you're there? Most important thing is, what good can I do while I'm actually in that location? That's what it boiled down to. I'm originally from the state of Texas, where all my family is at. It's another coast-to-coast trip for me. I was out in California. So it was a long trip getting out here, really long trip. But I've done it twice. I had to leave South Carolina, go over there, and come back again. But the one thing I've always done every time I've traveled is found a church home. And the first thing I look for in a church home when I meet people, I let them know, "Hey, my name is Ernest. I'm not here to warm a pew. I actually want to do something." And unfortunately, if that's not what you want me to do, I'm going to have to move forward. Each and every one of us has a talent, have an ability. It's a really bad thing to waste that. God gave that to you for a reason. Everything from the person who vacuums the building to people who can actually conduct the service. You're doing something that's worthwhile. You have that ability. You have that talent. My daddy taught me that a long time ago. I got tired of hearing it, but he told me that all the time. Obviously, I didn't realize this stuff until I got older. I've been fortunate enough where I could say I was born and raised in the church. I didn't know anything else until I got out into the military, to be honest with you. All I knew was the church. And as I got older, I started to realize that was like the best thing in the world, because I've met so many people who've come in after the fact or later in life telling me, "You don't realize how good you actually had it." Well, I realize that now. From the Sunday mornings I had to get up, the Sunday evenings I had to be there, Wednesdays I had to be there, gospel meetings, some of everything. Didn't matter what was going on, I was going to be there for it. I'm a much better person because of that. My parents were doing exactly what they should have, teaching me how to make it in life, realizing that you're not going to do anything unless you have God in your life, which I'm very glad of that. So when I got to Jacksonville and I ended up meeting Jimmy, I showed up one day because I had been going around to various places to worship, and I happened to end up over there. So when I met him, he asked me a couple of questions, where I was from, how I'm doing. I was like, "Yeah, my parents live back in Texas. You know, my brother's out there. A lot of my family, some of them in California." Joined me for lunch. And he also asked me, he was like, "So is there anything you're interested in doing? What is it that you need done?" Period. It wasn't anything specific. What do you need done? What do you need me to do? I think he really enjoyed that. I think he enjoyed it a lot. They give me a lot of stuff to do. They give me a lot of stuff to do. But it's okay. I enjoy that. I actually enjoy that. So, as I said, I'm very grateful for this opportunity to speak to you. Not necessarily just speak to you, but to share some things about the scriptures. Not only that have I necessarily learned, but there's always a different perspective you pick up in the scriptures, depending on, one, what's going on in your life, and two, what others may be dealing with. You may notice something, you read the scripture and be like, "I've never looked at it that way before." But you know what? That really helps. Our lesson this morning is going to be taken from 1 Samuel chapter 17. And for most of you, you're already very familiar with what this particular occurrence is. David and Goliath. I know this is a pretty lengthy one, 58 verses. But I'm going to go ahead and read through it and go ahead and cover the story. And as I'm covering this occurrence, break down a couple of points. Now, we know this is the story of David and Goliath. And this is really one of the, I wouldn't say one of the first, but one of the major introductions that we actually have to David, who's also known as a man after God's own heart. What's interesting about that is you see that very early in his life. So I'll go and begin reading in verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered their enemies together to battle and were gathered at Socoh, which belongs to Judah. They encamped between Socoh and Ezekah and Ephes-Damin. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah and drew up in battle array against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side with a valley between them. So if you envision this, you can imagine soldiers on one side, soldiers on the other. Part of it's an intimidation factor. The other part of it is the simple fact that here's the enemy, here we are. I'm going to go ahead and make our stance. Verse 4, and a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and in his arms he had a coat of mail, and the weight of his coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and on his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. So here's the first thing that you would have to possibly imagine. Average height men on opposite sides preparing to battle. Out of nowhere, you see this monstrous being that walks up, has an individual carrying stuff for him. I mean, you're looking at his weapons that are probably bigger than you are. And you're saying to yourself, wow, look at this. What are we supposed to do about this? Now, one of the things I always think about in the scripture when I read through the scripture, I also say to myself, what kind of situation have I ever dealt with or been through that looks just like Goliath? I'm pretty sure if you actually think back, you can find a lot of situations you've dealt with that felt like a Goliath. Like, how am I supposed to deal with this? I'm about to lose everything. This individual, this is about to happen to them. This is about to go away, and it seems monstrous. And every time you evaluate it, it just seems worse and worse and worse. And I can possibly imagine these men of Israel looking at that. Being a normal human being, I'm not going to criticize them too much. If I seen a man that big, I'm not going to be too courageous about wanting to step to him either. Especially head on. Now, it was describing his actual height. I've tried to Google this information. You'd be surprised what kind of concepts and mathematical translations most people come up with. The average one that it usually says is about 9'9", 6 cubits in a span. So 6 cubits is approximately 18 inches, like a foot and a half. Either way it goes, the man was massive. And it describes everything that he actually had. For example, when it was speaking about, it spoke about his actual, the staff, the spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels. Typically, if you have an item that's an actual spear, usually spearhead's a lot smaller. This one was massive. So it makes you stop to think, as large as his weapons actually are, gives you a really good description of how big of an individual he was. Not only that, I'm looking at his, thinking about his armor. First of all, how big he is, how much it has to actually weigh. Yeah, more and more I think about this, this is not an individual I want to deal with. Then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, why have you come to this line for battle? Am I not a Philistine and you are the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourself and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. I can imagine how bold and how conceited this individual must be. He's looking at everybody. They look like ants to him, pretty much. Everybody looks like ants. And knowing good and well, there's none of you standing right here that can stand against me. I am the mighty Goliath of Gath. Who's going to stop me? Skipping forward a lot. You have an idea of what happens to people who feel too high and mighty. But at the time frame, are you really thinking about that when you're facing that problem in your life, that situation, that Goliath? No. You're looking at, right, what is in front of you. That's the only thing you're paying attention to. Do I criticize them a lot for that? I'd like to, but then I also have to remember, how many times have I forgotten who I have on my side when I'm dealing with an issue? It makes me feel bad when that happens. Like, wait a minute, what am I so worried about? I have someone that can fight these battles for me. Most importantly, I can pray and forget about it. When Saul and Israel heard all these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David, the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, had 8 sons, and the man was old and advanced in years in the days of Saul. The 3 older sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul into battle. The name of these 3 sons in battle were Eliab, the firstborn. Next to him was Abinadab, and the 3rd was Shammah. I had to take my time pronouncing that. I've been practicing on that. David was the youngest, and the 3 oldest followed Saul. But David occasionally went and returned to Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine drew near, presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. Then Jesse said to his son, "Take now for you, for your brothers, an ephah of dried grain and these 10 loaves, and run to your brothers at the camp, and carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000, and see how your brothers fare, and bring back news of them." Now Saul and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. So David arose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, and took things in hand. Went as Jesse had commanded him, and came to the camp where the army was going out to fight and shout, shouting for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up battle array, army against army. And David left his supplies in the hands of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. Then as he talked with them, there was a champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistine, and said and spoke according to the same words. So David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the men, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So the men of Israel said, "Have you not seen this man who come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter and have great riches, and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel." Then David spoke to the men who stood by, saying, "What shall be done for this man who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that should defy the armies of the living God?" When I get to this verse right here, what I think about, I could just imagine David standing there like, who is this Philistine? Not even that, he said this uncircumcised Philistine. David had a lot of gall. He had a great deal of it. David is exactly how I should be on a regular basis. I have God on my side. What am I afraid of? What should I be afraid of? What problem? What person, what issue will I ever deal with that'll be too big for him to handle? See, David wasn't speaking about what he could do. He had someone on his side that not only can protect him, but can take care of any issue that he's ever dealt with. And as we read, you'll see how David gives examples of that. And the people answered him in this man, saying, "So shall be done for the man who kills him." Now Eliab, his oldest brother, when he heard the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David, and said, "Why did you come down here? And with whom have you left the few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart. You have come down to see the battle." And David said, "What have I done? Is there not a cause?" Then he turned toward another, and the same thing, and these people answered him as the first ones did. Now when the words which David were heard, they reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. Then David said to Saul, Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight the Philistine." Get this picture. Visualize this. It's an entire army. Men who were warriors and trained from birth, trained from childhood to be soldiers. All of them are afraid. When Goliath approached, what did they do? They ran. They did the exact opposite. They ran away. And it said, they didn't say they was afraid. They said they were greatly afraid. And now you have a shepherd boy who said, don't be afraid. He's running toward Goliath. Probably some of them there said, there's something wrong with this kid. There's really something wrong with him. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Actually, he does. And come to think of it, I've heard a lot of wisdom from those who were younger and children sometimes. Sometimes they're worth listening to. They can teach you a thing or two. Also, kids, pay attention to everything you do. Verse 33, and Saul said to David, you are not able to go up against this Philistine to fight him. You are a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took the lamb out of the flock, I went after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard, struck it, and killed it. Remember who David is. He minds sheep for his father. I didn't hear any hesitation in his voice when he said what he actually did. He's not doing that because he has the ability. He knows he has someone on his side that's going to take care of him. When I deal with certain situations at work, I'll have a time frame where somebody may say, ah, don't worry about that. Just go ahead and do this right. You can cut this corner. I can. But what's the result of me actually doing that? I could damage some equipment. I could get somebody hurt. I could get somebody killed. Or I could say, you know what? I don't want people upset at me. I know these people want to go home. They just want to do this. They want to deal with this. They don't want to be around here. Let me just go ahead and take care of what I need. It may seem minuscule, but that could be my Goliath right at that time frame. I have a decision. Your life works in two different ways. You can either do the right thing, you can do the wrong thing. Period. That wrong thing seems like an easy fix right now. That big Goliath that you're looking at is, do I want to do what's right and please God? Or do I want to do what's wrong and just make this a quick fix? Well, I could go with the quick fix. Here's something I stopped thinking about, a quick fix. What if you die during that time frame? Doesn't sound like such a small thing anymore, is it? And besides, when it comes to doing the right thing, guess who's standing right there with you? He's like, you know exactly what you need to do. And I'm right here with you. Now, you may not like the door I'm providing for you, but doesn't God always provide a door for you? Always does. Sometimes I look at it like, it's a lot of work. Do I really want to go through that way? Yes, I do want to go that way because I know the other way, it looks nice, but that may not turn out very well. David didn't even do that. David's looking this way. Yep, I see Goliath. I'm not even worried about Goliath because I know who has my back. I know who is going to fight this for me. The thing I love about David's attitude is through the whole situation, it never wavers. It stays the exact same. I would think that the other men in the army that would see this, somebody would have to say, maybe this kid's on to something. Like, why is he so unafraid? Or do they just see it as, it's just a kid, he's just talking. There's something about doing the right thing and having that type of attitude of being unafraid that inspires people. It's like, yeah, it is good to do the right thing. It is good to abide by that. You know what? We can handle this. We can take care of this. We can absolutely do this. But nevertheless, it's just David. And he gives this example of the lion or the bear. He never even hesitates in saying what he would have to do to go get that sheep back. He said, I went and got that sheep back. I took it back from its mouth. And when it rose up against me, I killed it. But this is what I really like after this description of what he tells them. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. I didn't hear any hesitation in what David said. The fact that he stood there and said, the Lord delivered me from the lion and the bear, and this Philistine, he's nothing either, because God's going to deliver me from him. That's the way we should be as Christians each and every day. We're going to run into problems every single day. Christ told us the world hated him, and if it hated him, what do you think it's going to do to us? It's going to hate us too. It's going to present a lot of problems. And those problems can take different shapes, different forms, whether it's an issue that you have to deal with at work all the time, or whether it's people that have nothing better to do than to make your life miserable. I know that sounds really odd, but there are people out there, I don't know if they wake up and have a daily schedule that they check off and say, make Ernest mad. I'm going to make that happen. It's like that's their whole purpose. Just to make things rough for you. You know what? Let me set him up in this situation and see how this is going to work. You know what? Something else I stopped to think about? Do you not know that those people who may be doing those things to you are watching you? Hey, you said you're a Christian, right? Well, let me see how you act during this situation. It is easier to talk about it. The difficulty is walking it. And that's what they're paying attention to. Remember that comment I made earlier about kids? You can tell kids, hey, you shouldn't do that. That's a no-no. But what about the stuff that you do all the time? Got a point. They are watching you. Can you imagine how many people had to be watching this situation with David? Mind you, he's talking with the king. I doubt the king was by himself. Could have been people around. Could have been somebody standing there like, yeah, this kid is crazy. I don't know what his problem is. There could have been somebody else like, wow, that's a lot of courage. Well, shepherd boy, you know what? I mean, God put Saul in the position that he's in. Maybe he's on to something. But the way that David spoke, I could imagine him how boldly. I could see him getting close to Saul's face and saying, that Philistine is going down too. God delivered me from the bear and from the lion, and he's going to deliver me from him as well. So Saul clothed David with armor. He put a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail. David fastened the sword and the armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them. And I can also imagine this armor he probably put on him. Mind you, it's David. He's probably walking around, you know, like a little kid when they try on stuff with grown-ups. He's probably walking around like, you know what? I can't do anything with this right here. I can't use this. Then he took his staff in his hand and he clothed himself with 5 smooth stones from a brook and put them in a shepherd's bag in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. This is the part where normal people would say, this kid is definitely crazy. He has a sling. He has five. And it was interesting that the scripture specifically said the 5 smooth stones. He put into his pouch and then drew near him. Can you imagine? Takes off all of his armor, drops everything, grabs a staff in his hand. You know what's interesting about the staff? How many of you can recall the 23rd Psalms? Thy rod and thy staff. It's interesting how everything in the Bible comes together. And you either hear of it once or twice and you realize, wait a minute, I never even noticed that. And for a shepherd, a staff was, that was something, that was his lifeline. Usually their staffs were excessively long and had a crook on the neck of. That's what they usually use to keep sheep in line, because sheep would just wander off anyway. They just grab them, just pull them back aside or tap them on the side and keep them in line. He took up everything that he knew, went and grabbed those five stones and drew near toward the Philistine. So the Philistine came down and began drawing near to David, and the men who bore his shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. So the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. I can imagine Goliath turns around. He's like, "Well, it's my time frame to go talk trash to the army of Israel again." And imagine him coming out and, "What is this? Who is this? You're sending a kid out here? You got a stick and some rocks?" But what he doesn't see is who is behind him, who is protecting him. You know, God tells us not to fear. And why is that? He's right there with us. What's there to fear? He has our back. That's exactly what David was thinking this entire time frame. This is what I need to be thinking each and every day of my life when I face that problem, that issue, that person, that occurrence, that extremely difficult time frame. When I feel like I'm all alone, God is right there. It's like, I'm still right here. I got you. I'm always here. You let me know what you need, and I'm going to provide it for you. But when God provides things for you, he does it in a way that no one else could. The other thing that happens is when God provides for you, in whatever you're going through, when God provides for you, not only is he going to prove a point about who he is and what power that he has, it's going to affect you. It's going to affect everybody watching. It's going to affect the person that's doing something to you. And sometimes, besides doing the right thing, you may never have to lift a finger. This isn't a blind trust where I'm taking a step out somewhere and I look down, I see clouds, I have no idea what's beneath me. I'm like, "Oh, well, let me hope for the best." It's not exactly how it works with God. You may not be able to see everything that's out there, but you don't have to worry about seeing it. God's like, "Let me be your eyes." God was David's strength. God was David's confidence. God was his shield. He was his protector. He was everything. And all David had to do was one simple thing: trust in him. A thing called faith. Some may say, "Oh, well, that faith could have been blind." The fact that David was alive to do what he was able to do, the fact that I'm able to wake up every day and to go about my daily routine, the fact that I am provided with all the necessities in life, the fact that I'm even here right now is proof of that. No, it's not a blind faith. I wouldn't have made it as far as I did in life if it wasn't for him. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, once again, I can imagine him standing here just like this. David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know there is a God in Israel." I could just see him standing there, just as bold. Look at him right in the windows of his soul and letting him know, "I am not afraid of you. God is going to take care of this for me." I can imagine some of the army saying, "Yeah, we can do this." I can see some others like, "Nah, I'm good. I'm out of here. Or others could probably be saying, why would we let him do this? I don't know. Were any of you doing anything? You're the armies of God, correct? But yet this shepherd boy had to show you the example, show you how it's done. And his only purpose of being there was to deliver food. If you think about that, what was David's whole purpose of being there? He was to deliver supplies and food to his brothers in the army. That was it. What do I think about there? I end up in places, maybe for a reason. But then when I get there, there's another purpose for me. Now, what am I going to do about it? Am I going to ignore it and be like, you know, I could do something, but I'm not trying to be here right now. Or I could say, you know what? I don't know why I'm here. I see something obviously going on. Let me go ahead and step up and do something. Let me say something. Let me set that example. Not so I can say, hey, look at me. Look, I'm doing the right thing. No. When I stop and think about it, Jesus didn't have to die for us. He could have easily said, I want to stay here in heaven. I know what I'm going to go through. I know how bad it's going to be. And these people, they're not going to accept me anyway. I mean, my own people are going to reject me. But he thought of it this way. I have to think of it like a parent. You don't even understand what you're doing and why it's wrong. You don't even understand wrong. I'm here to show you that. I'm here to help you. And I'm here to provide that way for you, to lay that path down for you. I'm going to go through all of that. David said, I'm going to show you guys how this is done. I'm going to show you why we should be doing this. And I want you guys to remember, it's not me doing it, it's God. God delivered me from this situation. He's going to deliver me from yours. And I love how boldly he was when he spoke. So it was. And then all the assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with the sword and the spear, for the battle is the Lord, and he will give you into my hands. In other words, that whole battle that they're dealing with, that's not between our army and yours. God already owns this. He already owns this. So it was, when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to David, that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. He wasn't waiting. He was like, hold up. Let me get up here in the front. Then David put his hand into his bag, took out a stone, placed it in the sling, and then slung it. The Philistine's mind is, you're throwing rocks at me, and I have all this armor on. Just think about the concept. I have all this armor. I have an armor bearer. I'm trained from war, from youth. And a kid is coming out here throwing rocks at me. Could I see how as a person he'd be like, I'm not worried about this. Yeah, I could easily see that. But here's where the story, here's where the occurrence gets very interesting. And when he slung it, it struck the Philistine in his forehead. So the stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the earth. Can you imagine? I can't even imagine. It makes me wonder what must have been going through Goliath's mind. He's like, all right, I'm going to hurry up, go ahead and take care of this. He's probably making plans for the rest of the day, whatever he's going to do. Gets hit with a rock, and he's like, oh, man, this is really how it's going to end? Can you imagine what the Philistine army's like? Like, yeah, go get him. Yeah, he got took down by a rock. Did you see that? It was a rock. He got took down by a rock. A rock. Right in his forehead. Hey, how did that happen? It's a rock. How did that happen? I can't possibly imagine what's been going through their mind. So when David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him, but there was no sword in the hand of David, just as he had said. Therefore, David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword, drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. What happened to all that bravado then? David just told him what he was going to do. He told him, the battle belongs to the Lord and he is going to deliver you into my hands. David said it And he actually did it. But he knew I couldn't have done this unless God was on my side. And I can't imagine the feeling, the dread going through the Philistines, like our great champion is done. We showed up early today. We had them afraid. We had them running away. And now a shepherd boy shows up with a sling and a rock and just killed our champion. And not only that, cut off his own head. This is seriously salt in the wound. He cut off his own head with his own sword. Now the men of Israel and Judah rose and shouted and persuaded the Philistines and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell along the road of Sarahim as far as Gath and Ekron. The children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their tents. I could just imagine the armies of Israel. As soon as that actually happened, like, oh, he's dead. Oh, we can get him now. I could just imagine they're running after him right now. They're all brave, like they're thinking to themselves, like, it's over. We got you now. We got you now. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. When Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, Abner, whose son is this youth? And Abner said, as your soul lives, O king, I do not know. So the king said, inquire whose son this young man is. Then as David returned back from the slaughter of the Philistines, Abner took him, brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man? So David answered, I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite. Can you imagine? This is the same young man whose purpose was to bring food and supplies to his brothers. Sees what's going on, hears it, asks about it, and questions. Then after he questions, wondered why no one's doing anything about it. Talks to the king. And is curious. But then also boldly tells him, I've guarded the sheep of my father. The lion and the bear came to take him. I would go retrieve it. And if it rose up against me, I killed it. I killed it because the Lord delivered me from the bear, from the paw of the bear and the lion. And now this Philistine right here, everyone's so afraid of. No, we are not going to be afraid. Can you imagine him walking in to Saul with the head of this Philistine in his hand, saying exactly what I told you. God delivered me from the paw of the lion and of the bear, and he delivered me from this uncircumcised Philistine. What I really get out of this occurrence is that regardless of how large of an issue or a problem you ever deal with in life, if you let God fight your battles for you, they're minuscule because nothing is too big for him. All you have to do is have faith. He tells you what you need to do. Abide by my word. Treat people right. Spread the truth. Do what's right, even if everyone else is doing wrong. Be kind to others. Love them. Take care. The same example he left for us in the New Testament is exactly what we should be doing. And as long as we're abiding by that, what do we have to worry about what we're dealing with? Nothing. See, the exact way David was is how we should be on a regular basis. God will deliver me from all of this. And it really inspires me the fact that he shows up in an occasion. Not even there for that purpose. But he sets that example. Each and every day of our lives, we're always placed in those situations where we can either set that example or we can be that help. We can be that source of inspiration. We have a spirit of courage. We are not afraid to tell the world, I'm one of God's children. I don't have to fear. I don't have that emptiness within me because it's filled. I'm not afraid. I can live this life because there's more to life than just this. Trials and tribulations that I'm dealing with are worth so much to what I'm going to earn in the very end, that crown. All of it is worth it, no matter what Goliath you may be dealing with. It's all worth it. And let's always think the way that David did first. This is an issue. This is something I'm dealing with. It's a person I have to deal with. But God's there with me. He is going to fix this for me. Imagine just the influence that had on everyone around that witnessed that. Not just the Philistines, but also the armies of Israel. That would make me feel like, I don't have to worry about anything anymore. No matter what problem I run into, God's going to take care of it. He's taking care of us right now, and he will continue to do so. I certainly hope the words I shared with you this morning are, well, just the occurrence, you know, help you to really be able to balance and compare and contrast the things you actually deal with on a regular basis. Not much different than what they deal with. I mean, we don't have a physical Goliath we have to deal with, but nevertheless, we are still battling. We're running a race. We're climbing a mountain. But we're not just here for ourselves. We're also here to help others out. Some fall by the wayside. Our job is to pull them up and help them out. Our job is, as we're running and people get tired, to be there for them. And it's also to share that with those who are sitting along the wayside and don't really know what to do. I don't know what direction I need to go. I'll show you. Come with me. Let's remember these things, not just today, but in our daily lives. Let's be sure to think about that and remember, as a Christian, we're never by ourselves. And physically, the church, we're the only physical support cast we have here on this earth, because each of us know what we're going through. I'm here for you. I know you're here for me. Willing to support and help out in any shape, form, or fashion. Now, the opportunity is always extended for those who would either choose to put our Lord and Savior on in baptism or to ask for strength. That opportunity is always present. And you have the opportunity to do so at select time. Thank you.